Okay, welcome back, and thank you very much for your kindness to return to the hall after the short break. As I said before the break, I would like to alter a little bit of program as you have it on your desk. I will give every panel member 5 minutes to react on what before the break has been said, and that's it so far as the panel immediately is concerned. Then I would like to open the floor for all of you with your questions, remarks, criticism, etc., and we will try and cope with them as well as possible. I don't know whether we will be able to do it, but we will at least try. We have two microphones. The two ladies will walk with the microphones. They will keep the microphones themselves, and they hold it for your mouth in order to see that it does not become an intervention of about 15 minutes. The panel. My question to the panel would be, and Bernard, if I may ask, comments with you, what is your reaction to what has been said before the interval? From your point of view as one of our most senior, also war correspondents, journalists who has been posted abroad and analyzes the news, I don't know how long already and I do not know how fast already. Please.
I think the core of everything we're discussing is speed. I think for a journalist, from the perspective of a journalist...
Is the microphone working?
Yeah, okay.
Yes.
All right.
Yes, much better.
What do I know about microphones, right? So speed is the essence. I was stationed many years ago in Vietnam, and I was stationed in Tehran during the revolution, and I wish we had had all these means to communicate this fast and to get the information of, for instance, diplomats, and that information was available, but very hard to get. So I don't think the world is changing. I don't think we're in a revolution. I think a couple of things are changing, and what caught me was the factor of speed, the fact that diplomats, but also news agencies, have to shift from the means of communication from traditional to more modern means. I don't think that's much of a change. They have to learn how to make a statement in 140 characters rather than in 17 paragraphs. That's important to them. It's also important to us. But all in all, from the perspective of a journalist, these are golden days. I love it. I love it when we're inundated with information, and we're very good in shifting what is propaganda and what is good. A guy like Frans Timmermans, Willem and I just looked it up quickly, online of course, is on Facebook and he has 215,000 followers. The man owns his own newspaper. That's the way we see it. And as with every newspaper, it's perhaps not completely objective, but we also have other newspapers, so I like that. And at a station like BNR, which is a commercial, around-the-clock, news-only radio station, so it's news all the time, we love it. We have a person, or several persons, at our desk who are specialized in shifting through all this stuff and filtering it quickly for us. And then, of course, there's the active side, because we are in a change too. Linear, as we call it, having a program at a set time, the 8 o'clock news, the 7 o'clock news in the morning on radio, is disappearing, and it is making place for on-demand, the Netflix revolution, and that's fine. There's nothing wrong with using our website for people and going online, doing podcasts, which is great, using the BNR app, which is excellent and being improved as we speak. That's a real fairly revolutionary means of communicating with our listeners. And they're starting more and more and more to listen to what they want the moment they want it, rather than us demanding from them that if they want to hear my show, which is on Thursday at 3 p.m, that they may want to wait till the evening or the next day or whenever and listen to the podcast and have the same information exactly the way they want it. By the way, my show, BNR The World, is in a little bit of a problem because we were being sponsored by a European subsidy and it's drying out. So if anybody knows a solution, I would be grateful. And there's also okay. one little thing. We are working on something that might interest the bunch of you here. We're trying to start something called BNR Expat, which would be an English language broadcast or narrowcast, a word that I haven't heard yet, for people who live here. There's a lot of them, thousands and thousands and thousands, in English every day, 15 minutes. And we will start with that as soon as, again, we find the sponsor to pay for it because we're a commercial station and nothing gets aired without a sponsor. But all in all, I personally, I'm very happy with what I hear. Being old school myself and having been a war reporter in a country without telephones, I can tell you that my personal opinion is always today is much better than yesterday and tomorrow will be far and far better than today.
Okay. Thank you very much, Bernard. And and I think the promotion of Bernard was in the fact that tomorrow will be better, particularly when you listen to him.
Anyway. And my show's tomorrow. Right. It's always on Thursday at 3 o'clock.
Willem, thank you very much for joining the panel this afternoon. Willem is advisor of international affairs of the City of The Hague. And amongst many other things, and as with the speakers before the break, you see information on them on the back of your program. Amongst many other things, he's also a senior fellow at the Klingendahl Institute. What is your reaction to my question for a reaction?
Yeah, and also commenting on U.S. international, of U.S. politics, yeah. The U.S. presidency, foreign policy, etc. Well, old school, Bernard, yes. I also feel like a traditional guy. And if we talk about 20 years of digital history, sounds funny, eh? If we talk about digital history, for most of those years, I thought, this is not my world. I'm a traditional guy. But I have to admit, I am a digital guy. And this is really also for me now a body part. Checking constantly my messages. It's rather extreme, but I'm not the only one, I think. Even at night, this is very, very close to me. And my wife is not always very happy with this, but that's
what... She has a role.
Yeah, on the other side. Okay, I saw it, yes. This is fascinating. And I told you, I'm commenting on U.S. politics also. But you said I'm an international advisor of the city, and I see it happening around me. Last week I was in India with a mission from the city of The Hague under the leadership of the vice mayor, the deputy mayor, Mr. Carsten Klein. We were presenting The Hague Security Delta, so that's about security companies, Knowledge Institute, The Hague Campus, The Hague University, etc., a few others. Municipal representatives. So we were with a delegation of around 20. And you see it happening. If you look at all these city diplomats, we talk about city diplomacy, all representing the Hague Security Delta, the city of The Hague. And I think it's about an integrated approach if you talk about the digital tools and the traditional tools. For instance, our deputy mayor, Mr. Klein, but also the delegation members. Still, it's very important to talk with people, to look them into the eyes, to shake hands. You cannot set up a real 100% digital mission with only emails, Skyping. There's always a screen between the two people or other groups, larger groups. So that's still very important, and I'm stressing this whole thing of the balance. So important. But on the other hand, and that's really a difference with a few years ago when I went on mission with a delegation from The Hague. What are these politicians doing, the other delegation members? Well, as soon as they finished their conversation, it was sending a tweet. Where is my blog? Have you made pictures? What is your picture? Okay. Can I get it as an attachment? Sending it out to the world, to all those followers? That was an intriguing one, Mr. Timmermans, 200,000 plus followers. And basically that's what all the politicians, but also other business people or people in the government, the local, the provincial, the national government, international organizations are doing. Basically all of us, we are involved in these phenomenons. So I think it's really interesting. And it's we are in a... Jan, in your brilliant speech, I have to admit, to say, you mentioned the word gradual. I think we are in the midst of a gradual process. We still don't know what is the end of it. Is there an end of this process? We will see. And it's a very young process because it all started... When we talk about digital tools and diplomacy, it all started, in my view, with Secretary Clinton in 2009 when she asked, invited Anne-Marie Slaughter, one of her top advisors, to study diplomacy, what it was and what it is, what it should be, and trying to create a new architecture for diplomacy. And I think 2 years later, in the Quadrennial Diplomatic Review, once in the 4 years, it's checked if it's still actual. And the basic message was the Ministry of Foreign Affairs, the State Department in Washington, it was an ivory tower, and come out of your tower. We have non-state and sub-state actors, NGOs, companies, international organizations. We are not in this field alone. And you have to reach out, transparency, reach out. We need another type of diplomat. So in the US, I think it's fair to say it all started in 2011, and that's a different behavior. You may make mistakes, not too many mistakes, of course. Reach out, not always in that defensive mode, what you see at the ministries, behind the backs of the politicians. No, we expect that from you. And I think also, but you know it better, I think, our Ministry of Foreign Affairs, but all over the world, other ministries of foreign affairs, they followed the example of the United States. Not all of the countries, they do it in a bit different way in some countries, but come into this process, and we're all linked together. Now, I think it's really fascinating. This whole landscape of diplomacy is now fragmented. And I will come to my last words now. We have citizen diplomacy at the basis. That means that basically every human being is a diplomat. And this is the democratization of diplomacy. We have citizen diplomacy, city diplomacy, cultural diplomacy, digital diplomacy. Then we also talk about almost all of the people in the world. Look at Africa, where people have mobile telephones more and more. It's a revolution there. So that makes it fascinating. We talk about big data, but also very, very, very complex. And we don't know yet the consequences, but that's one of the reasons, I think, also to talk today about this. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you very much, Willem. Willem was modest enough not to say it himself, but the mission that he went with to India was actually meant to be led by the mayor himself. But because of the political situation in the Netherlands, the refugee crisis, I wouldn't call it entirely a crisis, but at least he found that he had to make his policy here in The Hague itself, which I think is, so to my opinion, a very, very logical choice. That's why Mr. Klein went as leader of the delegation. And William, you mentioned this as something which is very close to you, but Guido told us before the interval that this is already outdated. It should be a watch.
Well, I'm still a traditional guy in a digital era.
The next speaker will be Guido for 5 minutes also as member of the panel. Reaction on what has been said before the interval, not on what you yourself said. Guido was kind enough to stand in for Mr. Keulen, who unfortunately had to inform us this morning that due to personal reasons he was not able to join us. Guido was willing to do that. 5 minutes for you.
Thank you. And because the speaker that is not here, he's from the Dutch Journalist Society, so I will try to share some of their thinking in my reflections. For many of you, maybe Holland is a strange country news-wise. We have our own language, which doesn't always make it simple to understand. And we are very high on the press freedom list. We are always in the top three, top four, which is great, but it also means we have a very fragmented press and on every topic we have many opinions, which is good, but we also have them on the extremes. So for example, to give you a very simple example of today, this morning we had a press alert that in September 8,400 refugees came to the Netherlands, the highest number ever. And then we know if we bring out one of these press alerts, which goes to all the media and to some communications professionals as well, we know there will be a lot of reactions. All the media in the Netherlands will take it, but also the politicians will pick it up. So by definition, the right-wing politicians will say the number is too low because we didn't calculate everything well and not everybody has been subscribed in, and everybody has their view, which means that in the 40,000 articles a day I mentioned we monitoring, you will see a wide variety of viewpoints. And that might, from an international perspective, make Holland a complex country to understand, because on every topic you can have every view, which doesn't seem very homogeneous like some other countries, but this is typical Holland. So you have people agreeing, disagreeing, not sure whether they're agreeing, but everybody has an opinion. And that means when you talk to media, because I tried to put it from the media perspective, there's a couple of things I think it would be interesting for you to know and to be aware of. First of all, with all this technology we have now, all journalists are equipped with huge amounts of data and backgrounds. So to give you a parallel example, my son is 14. If he doesn't know something, he doesn't think he's stupid because he thinks he has a mobile phone to find the answer. And this is also happening in the news world. If a reporter goes from Amsterdam to The Hague to visit you to do an interview, he will have an hour the time to do all the research. So even if he's not knowledgeable about the topic, he will be able to go back into databases, in articles, he will see videos, he has everything. So he can come to your office and say, listen, I understand that your country in 1992 said this and this was the position. What do you think about this? And you might be completely surprised by that question. And this is because it's all available. And if you're not aware of this huge availability of data and background, it might surprise you. It also means that the sheer volume and the speed is one element, but you get used to that. The fact that we have these many articles every day doesn't mean they're all that important. But what is important, if things move and are picked up rapidly, then it might be interesting to see whether they ramp up. And in the old days, you could say, like you had a saying in the UK, if you're on the front page of the Times for more than 3 days as a politician, this is in a negative way, this is the end of your career. I think in the current position, you will see the build-up much faster. If there's negative news, it will be probably the first 24 hour that will make or break you, because then there's so much that comes with it as well. And I think the other thing is, but I had hoped that Art would have been my neighbor before me, because as I said to you before, every organization will be a news organization, and even in our own Ministry of Foreign Affairs, we have a head of management of the newsroom, so we're all becoming media organizations. And I think this is quite an interesting perspective. You had journalists and you had spokespeople, and now I think it's all becoming news. And also this is interesting, because you see that before you had spokespeople and journalists, and this is how the news was created. Nowadays all organizations are media organizations, and many organizations, it depends a little bit where you are, have their own stories to tell. And if they cannot put it into the media themselves, they can also buy advertising space or create native advertising, create their own websites, create their own information. And this makes it a very different world than a couple of years ago. And maybe just the final conclusion is, as I said before, the alert comes on your watch. If the watch buzzes, then you need to react. And I think the rest, you should be, there's more time to reflect. Thank you.
Thank you very much indeed. As you have said, everybody has an opinion in the Netherlands on something, and there's one subject on which we indeed all have an opinion, and is on our national soccer team. And now the Belgians, they are number one, and we are not there anymore, so we feel ourselves very badly, and we have 16 million coaches who say what actually should happen with our soccer team now, between now and the next World Championships. And the Belgian ambassador is here, and we are very jealous of him now, these days. That's one thing. Secondly, you said the digital age and how we have to adapt ourselves. I'll give you a small example. My grandson of 3 years old, went to the television in my house and started to do like this. And I said, Opie, it doesn't work, because he was adapted to his iPad, and he thought the television is like that as well. I said, no, television is a bit old-fashioned. You go to your iPad again. Anyhow, that having been said, Mr. Art van der Vos, he has already been introduced by Guido as head of the News Directorate and Communication Director in the Ministry of Foreign Affairs. 5 minutes, the floor is yours.
Yes, thank you so much. Well, Art van der Vos, I just arrived this summer from San Francisco, where I acted as consul. And I have to say, it's very interesting to be with you. You are my diplomatic colleagues, and I'm born the same way in the career as you did. And I'm now surrounded with some journalists on the panel, so that gives me a very interesting perspective to be on this side of the room. I do feel one of the remarks I heard was, is diplomacy part of the public domain, or is it the public domain? Well, it is the public domain in general, but I also share probably with my colleagues, where is the balance between trust, where we work in trust together to get things fixed, and where is the word of accountability necessary? And I think that is a very interesting perspective in general, besides the whole point of the digital age where we all are in, and also a question that I would like to discuss with you later on, and maybe you have some specific questions on it. Within our ministry, we had a traditional head of the spokesman's office. We had a different department that dealt with news analysis. We had a different department with editors that created all sorts of websites, articles. And we decided that actually it would be much faster, and also in the urgency to be speeding up our replies and information to the public, to put it all together in a so-called newsroom. So besides what we always are doing on the sending side, as you all know, sending our declarations, our press releases, news articles, and so on, through our spokesman's office of what foreign policy entails, what our ministers are doing, what their positions is and are, we created also a mechanism to see if it is adequate, the timing is adequate at the moment to do so, to have the analyzer system or the people responsible for reviewing the different channels, not only the classical, sorry to say so, the classical media, the newspapers, articles, but also those articles or comments that are popping up on the digital channels to see if it is relevant at the moment and adequate. So sending had become also in the context of speed more important, and the mechanism to set that up is that we are creating, putting everybody physically in one room where the people that are responsible for reviewing all these digital channels as the press articles together with the people that are creating the content that is necessary to put the message at best outside. And I find, and that is because that I learned before, the whole view of from the ministry of perspective, like the inside and the outside, that is sort of now sort of disappearing, that border. But is it disappearing? Or where is actually the limit, or are there limitations? And you, in your speech, focused on co-creation more and more and more. But there is also co-creation in certain responsibilities. And that is something that is, in general, when you talk about spokesman's offices, where is the responsibility of the public information officer, and where is the accountability of the politicians that are leading your ministry and steering your foreign policy. So sending, monitoring, getting traction, getting creation, getting interaction. That is actually what we are focusing on in a speedy process. Coming from San Francisco, I also do realize that also looking to that digitalizing news and information that you can be very efficient about it. That you can make still quick decisions on what is news and what isn't news. But still, it is a human process. It's not for nothing that in Twitter and in Google and whatever, they get their people to their offices and not depend on the sort of the digital platforms to get debates and discussions. They believe to be speedy and quick and decide to be creative on what to do to put people together. So that's also in what I have heard about you, that you're saying, okay, how important Twitter and digital channels are, still the importance of the human contact is very relevant, and very relevant to create messages that are fit to the job that we do. That being said, and we don't have a very we don't have the our new promo film about the newsroom ready here, but you also see that we feel that we have to show to the outside world, not only for the content part, but also for the ministry and being a public office, to show that we are efficient and how we go about it. So the accountability is not only on the content part, but also on the public part, and also on creating support and traction on that. So I feel that also, because we focus very much on content and to be speedy, and why do we take decisions on Syria or why we don't take decisions on Syria, there's also a very important part of what we do also as public officers to explain to the public that we are what we do with taxpayers' money, that it is efficient, and also take them into, engage them in the processes that they are looking at. So I feel that besides content and foreign policy, that the digital age and also creating traction and interaction is also for very much on explaining why we as public office are there for the benefit of the people, and also hope that we get favorable decisions in Parliament on foreign policy in general.
Okay, thank you. Does your promo go viral?
Sorry?
Does your promo
yes,
go viral?
Of course,
when
yes.
When will it be?
Yes. Well, we are putting it on different websites and so on, but I'm also reading, and I'm new to the Netherlands again. I've been outside for 8 years, and I do understand that that still it's quite hard if you read the articles about propaganda, government propaganda, etc.
Yeah, yeah.
That I find it a very difficult discussion if you try to create engagement, co-creation, and traction of what you do.
Okay, we will follow it very closely.
Yeah.
About the digital age, my last project for the Ministry of Foreign Affairs was New York 400. We had 400 years relations between the Netherlands, Amsterdam, and New York. And we celebrated it in a large way. And in the project team, at that time, which was already quite a few years ago, of course, we used the social media, et cetera, et cetera. And we had in our own team someone who did the blogs. And immediately after we sent something out, he put a block on in order to try and influence the opinions of others with regard to what we have been doing. I think in the foreign affairs, it was one of the first times that actually technique was being used.
Yeah.
Anyhow, Jan, would you like to react on what the others had said? Or?
Well, yes, if I may. That's
yeah,
very
you may. Definitely.
That's very
I ask you.
Thank you.
I ask you.
Yes, well, I have little in common, as I said before, with these gentlemen all from the media and from the ministry, but I have one thing in common with my neighbor, and that I also have a 14-year-old son who is now on holiday this week at home, not going away. And yesterday he actually finished a book, and he liked the book very much, and he was sitting on the couch and looking at me and said, "This was a good book." And I normally never see that kind of behavior with my son, who is all the time in the digital media and playing games with Russians and Koreans and his friends in Vassanar or in another part of town. I'm realizing that I agree with what some people said. The last 3 feet is very important in relations between people. But I realize that people also meet other people in the digital sphere. And that may even be true for diplomats and among diplomats, and you build on that with real-life relationships, with meeting one another, but the beginning may actually be digital. And although I'm not a diplomat, I once had that experience myself when somebody emailed me and said, "Jan, we know one another from Twitter, this was a diplomat. I'd like to come to your institute with 24 diplomats to have a discussion." So it started in the digital sphere, and I think it's interesting to look at these instances where we see, because diplomacy is about fundamentally about relationships, where these relationships may also start in the digital sphere. I think the good thing about digital is, for the good news for you, is that finally you have a face. Diplomats used to be faceless, largely. Now people can see what you do and take a great interest in what you do. And that, so it not only enhances potentially the efficiency of the organization, and that's what just what Art also said, it enhances the legitimacy of the organization with your own population, with people who have an interest in your daily job. The word trust, I agree, is important there, and this is also how states can look at how trust can be enhanced between ordinary people and government, where we can frankly say in many countries there's somewhat of a crisis going on in trust between government and the population at large. So how can these new tools be used for that purpose?
Jan, if I may intervene, mm-hmm. so can we really talk about the democratization of diplomacy there? Because this is some sort of a counterbalance then, that you can create trust also then with all these kinds of diplomacy.
Well, that's a big word. What you see is that there is a democratization of the playing field, mm-hmm. where if you break down diplomacy in functions, and the requirement would be that when you perform a number of functions, you do diplomacy, then you could say there are more than just the national governments are involved in diplomacy. Diplomacy was there before the state, about 3,000 years before mm-hmm. Christ, or the Common Era, whatever you like. It's there still, and you see that many players are active in that field. Working with those players and working in that open playing field is, I think, the real challenge. And we see that organizations and people are a little disoriented, and that's the first stage where we are. But there is a lot to be gained from working with these new media and digital tools, and that's what we're sort of starting to find out. I don't think it's just a generational thing, by the way. It's not just a generational thing. It's not a matter of us old dogs at this kind of part of the table being phased out of the system, and then you will be there, and the ministries will be there, the governments will become fully digital.
It's extra necessary to find out what is diplomacy uh-huh. in these days. Don't you think so?
Well, you've got a lot of experts here.